Welcome to Cradles and Candles, a podcast where we explore the magic in every day. I'm your host, Elowyn Sage, and whether you're a parent, caregiver, or simply curious about your spiritual journey, this is a space to learn, reflect, and connect. So light a candle, take a deep breath, and let's step into magic together. So to start off, I want to thank everyone for just understanding that the podcast is a little late. I'm still not 100% with how I'm feeling, but I still wanted to get the podcast out. So moving on into the future, I might not record every week. It might be every other week. It might be every week. Just bear with me until I start to feel a little bit better and have a little bit more energy. But today we're going to be diving into a topic that comes up for so many witches and spiritual seekers, and that's if you should be working with a community versus solitary practice, and what are the benefits and the downfalls of each. So we're going to just jump right into that. But before I do, I'm going to do a general card pull to just help guide us through our days and our weeks. I am using the Rose Oracle card deck once again by Rebecca Campbell today. And this is just going to be a general card pull to guide us through our day. So we have the Thorn, which is protection, boundaries, and clear communication. So if you've been going through a time of struggles where maybe the road hasn't been incredibly clear, it might be time for you to process on protection magic, maybe some boundary magic, try and just reach out for clear communication to try and make what is blocking your way a little bit more understood for you. So the rose is the queen of all flowers. Her soft and often fragrant bloom takes our breath away from near and far and is a bridge between heaven and earth. She has the capacity to act as a portal to our true selves and call our soul more fully into our body. But the rose is not all gentle and soft. In fact, most roses are armored with spiky thorns and prickles of various shapes and sizes. We are too like the rose. These sharp protectors act like knights defending their queen, clearly setting necessary boundaries and conditions for her to do what she was born to do. So often, we don't get taught how important it is for clear communication and loving boundaries in our relationships. Communicating our needs and establishing our boundaries allows not us just to feel safe, but those in a relationship with us to also feel safe. So this card just delivers a message of the importance of clear communication, boundaries, and taking responsibility of our needs. So just be there for yourself. Understand that you need to have those boundaries made. You need to protect yourself and make sure that the ones that you love, that you are around, are also protected. So I think that's a great message just to take into the week when things get difficult, when things become hard. Make sure that your communication is clear, your boundaries are set, and you're protecting yourself. So let's dive into the topic we're talking about. And basically, is it better to practice alone? Is it better to join a coven? Is it better to have a circle or an online group? What does it mean to walk your path independently versus walking it as part of something larger? We're going to explore the different types of communities in witchcraft and spirituality. We're going to explore what solitary practice looks like and how to find that right group for you if you feel like that is what you need. We're going to talk about some red flags to watch out for and then just the pros and cons of both paths. So let's get into it. When we talk about the community in witchcraft, it can mean a lot of different things. It's not just one image or one type of group. I think a lot of people think of community and they think of a coven and getting together and having a circle. But there is a spectrum of ways that witches can come together and learn and grow and share their craft. So let's start with the most commonly known one, the coven. So covens are the more traditional form of witchcraft community. They're often structured with shared rituals, initiations, and sometimes a lineage that connects members back through generations. In a coven, you might find a high priestess or a high priest, or sometimes both, guiding the work, setting a calendar of rituals, and a strong emphasis on discipline and devotion. There are many different types of covens that you can join into and traditions within the witchcraft community, and we'll talk about all of those on another podcast. But for many, being in a coven feels like joining a spiritual family. There's mentorship, there's accountability, and a shared rhythm of practice. But covens can also come with expectations. They have commitments of time, they have some secrecy, some loyalty, which don't always fit everybody's path. And that's okay. Not everyone needs or wants that kind of structure in their own growth in the craft. I personally am a part of a coven slash temple, and I never thought that it would be something that I would join, because for many years I thought just working on my own was what I needed, until I came to a point where I wanted to join with another group of people. And since I've joined my coven, I've learned a lot. We've had a lot of shared practices, rituals, learning experiences. And my coven personally is not as strict as some other traditions. And so I still have that freedom to be myself, to have my own solitary practice. But then I get to go and join a group of people who are like-minded, who share the same practices that I do. So if you're thinking about a coven, just be mindful that there's so many different types of traditions and covens that you can join. And if you're looking for one that's more strict, you can find that. If you're looking for one that's more flexible, they're also out there as well. You just need to look and search a little. So other than covens, then we have the circles or the study groups. These are more flexible gatherings. And these can be just groups of witches, pagans, or spiritual seekers who meet regularly to celebrate the Sabbaths, share knowledge, or just practice together. Circles tend to be less hierarchical and more collaborative, so they don't really necessarily have someone who's at the top. Everyone contributes to their own way. Maybe one person leads a meditation, another person brings herbal knowledge into the group, when someone else might provide that ritual space. So everyone has a part to play within a circle. Over time, these groups often become little pockets of chosen family where you can learn, you can heal, and evolve alongside others walking on a similar path as you. So now in our modern world, we still do have covens and we still have circles and study groups, but we also can't forget that we have online communities now. And there are many different forums of online communities that would also give you the same sense of being able to work and learn from other people. So from social media groups and Discord servers to podcasts and forums, digital spaces have just made it possible for witches from all over the world to connect instantly. These spaces can be incredibly powerful. You can share ideas, learn new techniques, find mentors, or just feel seen and supported. Even if there's no one nearby who practices like you, there's probably something online that you can kind of learn from. It's important to understand that not everything shared in those spaces are rooted in authentic tradition or grounded practice. When you go onto an online community, you do need to trust your intuition. You do need to cross-check information and remember that you have to live by your own experience and understand that your experience is valid too. Sometimes online groups can share knowledge that seems maybe off-putting to others and inviting to others. So you kind of need to be able to weed through all of that when we go into the online communities, because it is a lot of different people from different areas of the world, different mindsets. And not all the information is going to be as clear-cut as it would be from a small group that you meet in person. So though online groups are amazing, and they're some place that you can go very quickly to find that knowledge, just be mindful and use your gut when you're looking through the information. And then we also have the just very simple local meetups, shops, and festivals. This is like, in a way, the heartbeat of community in a person. We probably all have local metaphysical shops that host workshops near us, or someplace that maybe do a tarot card swap, or just a small like a Sabbath celebration. You might be live near someplace that has a weekend pagan pride event where people just go together and celebrate the turning of the wheel and share their craft openly. All of these spaces have their own kind of magic. So if you can find local meetups or shops or festivals, you can feel the energy of belonging, of connection, and of being a part of something living and real within those as well. There's nothing quite like being in a circle of people who just get it. And you can have that with your little local metaphysical shops and your local meetups. And it's just getting with a group of people who understand your language of symbols, energy, and spirit. Each type of community, whether it's formal or informal, traditional or modern, online or in person, carries its own energy and purpose. Some are deeply rooted in tradition and lineage, while others are more fluid, creative, and ever evolving. The key is to figure out what resonates with you. Your path doesn't need to look like anyone else's. Whether you find your people in a coven, a study circle, a Discord chat, or just at your local metaphysical shop, what matters is that you have the connection that means most to you. The shared spark of understanding, growth, and belonging that keeps the craft alive within you. And if community does not do that, then you don't need a community. And so on the flip side, we do have many witches and spiritual seekers who just choose to walk the path as a solitary practitioner. Being solitary doesn't mean lonely. It just means sovereign. You are the only one who shapes your practice, your rituals, and your connection to the unseen. There's no hierarchy. There's no formal rules to follow. It's just your relationship with spirit, nature, and your own inner self. As a solitary witch, you might craft your own rituals, your own spells, blending traditions that speak to you, or you just might try and build something entirely new. In solitary practice, you might draw inspiration from books, from podcasts, or just teachings of others that you've heard along your journey. And by the end of the day, you follow your intuition. You get to be the author of your own spiritual journey. One of the most beautiful parts of being a solitary practitioner is the freedom it brings. Your practice, when you feel called, is no one else's, and it's not on anyone else's schedule. You just do it when you feel like you want to do it. You can perform a full moon ritual in your pajamas. You can whisper a spell over your morning coffee, or you can commune with your ancestors in total privacy. There's an intimacy to solitary practicing, a kind of quiet sacredness that comes from not needing to perform or conform. And for many, being solitary deepens the relationship with personal guides, deities, and natural world. Without the outside influence, you can learn to really listen to your intuition, to the land around you, to the subtle nudges of spirit, and that inner dialogue that just becomes your teacher. And of course, when you choose to walk a solitary path, it does have its challenges as well. Without a community to lean on, it can sometimes feel like you're practicing in a vacuum. There may be moments of doubt, times when you wonder if you're doing it right, or you wish that you had someone to share a ritual with. And that's completely normal. Every solitary witch has felt that at some point. But remember, solitary doesn't mean isolated. You can still connect with others. You can still attend workshops and festivals or online discussions when you choose. The key difference is that your primary practice remains personal and self-directed. You engage with community on your own terms, not out of obligation, but out of curiosity and connection. I would say that my practice is still very solitary, even though I work with a coven. My type of coven and my high priestess really pushes us to have our own practice. She pushes us to find our own way to be a solitary practitioner, but then come together as a group with like-minded traditions and rituals. It has guided me in a lot that I do as a solitary practitioner, but there's still also a lot that I do that is different from what they do. And she is very welcoming to all of that. Some witches, like me, flow between both worlds, solitary at home and then social and seasonal gatherings or study circles, or just the moments where we go to circle. And there's no single way to define it. The solitary path is just about honoring your autonomy, trusting your intuition, and recognizing that your magic doesn't need permission to exist. It's your path, your practice, and your relationship with the divine, and that in itself is sacred. I truly believe most witches should start off as a solitary practitioner because that builds your intuition. It builds your own little small practices. And then when you get to a point where you're like, I just need someone else, I need more guidance, then you can go and help yourself find a community and you can go on that search to a new step in your journey. And so with that being said, how on earth do you find a community? If you're feeling that pull to connect with others, to find your people, your circle, your community, there are so many entry points that you can start with. The best place to start is just local. Start with your metaphysical or your occult shops. It's often a great first place to look. Many of these spaces host workshops, seasonal rituals, or casual meetups. You might find flyers on bulletin boards for a tarot fair, a moon circle, or even a witchy book club. So don't be afraid to walk in, browse, ask questions, and introduce yourself. These small steps can open up the door for meaningful connections. Next thing you could do is try and look for a pride, a pagan pride day, or community festivals or public rituals. These events often welcome practitioners of all different backgrounds. Whether you're brand new or have been in your path for decades, they're just a wonderful opportunity to learn, celebrate, and just be around others who speak the same spiritual language as you. You might discover local covens or circles recruiting new people at these events, or just meet a few like-minded souls to connect over a coffee later on. And of course, like I've said before, you have the online world. It is bursting with new ways to connect. There are forums, Discord chats, social media groups, podcasts that gather witches and pagans from all over the world. And you can just join for your specific tradition or interest. So you can find one for kitchen witchery, astrology, divination, green magic. Whatever your vibe is, you can probably find it. And you can just start sharing ideas, asking questions, and offering insight of your own. Online spaces can be amazing for finding inspiration and support, especially if you live somewhere where in-person community is just hard to find. So just remember to use discernment and trust your gut, like I said before, about who feels genuine, and never feel pressured to share more than you're comfortable with. Being online, you need to have that safety. You need to keep yourself safe, and you just need to be understanding of who you're talking to because it can be very dangerous. So if that is the path that you choose, just do it in a safe manner and look out for yourself and don't go past your comfort zone with a group that might be online. The next thing that you can also do is just read books and listen to podcasts. Many authors and hosts have their own communities or events that they host, whether it's online workshops, retreats, or Patreon groups. As they, as you explore their work, you can start to see the network of people they're connected to. And that can lead you to circles. It can lead you to teachers or gatherings. You don't even know they exist until you start looking for them. So when you are choosing to reach out, just remember to start small. You don't have to dive headfirst into a coven or commit to a group right away. You can attend a public ritual first or do something that is more open and welcoming. You can also just take a one-time class to get a feel for the teacher's energy and the group dynamic. Even joining a thoughtful conversation online can be a gentle way to connect and learn with what resonates you. When I started with my coven, I think I went for almost a whole year without actually stating that I wanted to join. I just needed to feel it out. I needed to make sure that this was something that I wanted to do. And then once I decided I felt safe there. I felt like it was a good place for me to learn. I felt welcomed. I decided to initiate into the coven, but it did take me a while because I wanted to make sure it was right for me. And it was a commitment that I was willing to make at that moment in time. And it's all about that. It's all about feeling what is safe for you, what's genuine for you, and what aligns with your spirit. Finding community in witchcraft isn't about popularity or fitting in. It's about resonance. It's about finding those people and places that help you grow, help you ground, and remember why you started this path in the first place. So if community isn't for you, that's okay. And if you are looking for a community and you're feeling like it's difficult to find it, give it time. Trust your intuition and trust how you feel. Your special community will come to you and you will find it when the time is right. You just need to keep searching and be understanding with yourself when things don't feel right. So now let's talk about what to look for as far as red flags and green flags, like the good signs, the bad signs, just so you have a little bit more to go off of when you do start your search. So when you're exploring witchcraft communities, it is very important to just stay mindful. Like I've said multiple times throughout this episode, to just notice how a group makes you feel. The way a group makes you feel will say a lot. Some good signs to look out for is that the people respect your boundaries and your personal path. They don't try to cookie cutter you into what they believe or their tradition. They are understanding that you might have some things that are slightly different and they're willing to hear them out. The leader who teaches and guides doesn't control the whole thing. They do allow you to learn. They guide you. They allow you to do different things. They're just not controlling your every action. Spaces that feel inclusive, safe, and open to different perspectives is always a good sign. As long as you're feeling inclusive and safe and that you can share how you feel, you probably found a good group. And then just making sure that the values align with your own spiritual ethics. Obviously, you want them to align with the ethics that you have for your spiritual path and just how you are as a person, and that they mesh together well. So things to be cautious of when you're looking for a group is if at any point you feel pressured to commit quickly or secrecy feels uncomfortable, be mindful of that. It might not be a good thing. If money talk is very vague or seems excessive, most covens shouldn't ask you to pay to be in them. I know mine, we do about $25-ish a month, and that is purely for the rituals, that is purely for the food that we have, for the crafts that we do. And so we do that so that we can afford to get together 5 to 6 times a month. So just be mindful when it's talking about money. A lot of people say if a coven asks you for money, it's an immediate red flag. I would say if they ask you for an excessive amount of money, it is. But also understand that if you're looking for a smaller group, if it's not a big group, if it's just starting off, then there might be a money aspect in it. They might need $15 to $20 a month to help run the rituals, to have the products with it, to have the food, to be able to do the crafts. And so though money can be a red flag, it's not an immediate turnoff. Just be mindful that if they are talking about money, you understand exactly what it's for and that it's not excessive. The other thing that you need to look out for is that hierarchies that put too much unchecked power into one person's hands. So one person has all the power and no one else has any say. And then the last thing is that the group discourages questions, individuality, or outside learning. If a coven ever tells you that you can't learn outside of it, or you can't ask questions, or you can't be an individual, it's not a good vibe, and it's probably not a good group to get into just because they're discouraging you from being yourself, which is still very important. A healthy community should support your growth and honor your autonomy. If something ever feels manipulative, exclusionary, or controlling, trust your intuition. Your gut will always tell you when something's off. Believe it and go with it. That's the whole point of this practice for the most time, listening to your inner self, your higher self, and your intuition. So now we're just going to talk about just the pros and cons of both paths. So we're going to start with community practice. Some of the positive things about a community practice is that its shared energy and rituals can feel powerful and supportive. It can support you in your way. It can help you grow. It gives you opportunities to learn from others and exchange wisdom. Sometimes people have different viewpoints that we might not see, and it's helpful to see and understand all of that. And then it just has companionship and belonging, especially around the Sabbaths and full moons. It's so welcoming and joyful to be able to have those celebrations with a group of like-minded people. It's different when you do it by yourself versus with a group of people. The energy is different. The vibes are different, and it's just a wonderful place and time to be in. And so if you ever get the opportunity to experience that, I highly suggest it. Because when I did my first circle with a group of people, it was life-changing. Now, some of the cons of community practice is just scheduling and group dynamics can limit flexibility. They will be off of schedules. You will be scheduling the rituals, the full moon things, the activities that you do. And it's not all that flexible for you. If you want to be able to do a full moon ritual, but you already have plans, you won't be able to do that with a coven. So it is important that you understand that you won't be able to do everything with that group, which is why solitary practice is still very important when you choose to be with a coven. Because you're working with different people and different mindsets, there is always going to be some sort of drama, politics, clashing of personalities. Just be mindful about that. It can happen, but if you're in a good group of people and a good community or a good coven, you should be very limited because you've found a group of people that are like-minded. And when you get together, the sole focus is your spiritual practice, not everything outside of it. So though that can be a downfall, I feel like you can easily find a coven that avoids that as well. And then sometimes traditions can feel rigid or outdated if they don't align with your own personal path. Sometimes they can veer off of what you personally do. In times, that can be a good thing. In other times, it might be not so good of a thing. I know that my coven do some things that I'm not used to, that I don't necessarily agree with, but it's not like it's something that I have a problem with. It's just sometimes we put fire in the east. I don't personally do that in my solitary practice, but we do it as a coven, and I've come to understand the reasoning behind it. So though it can seem rigid or outdated, just learn from it and understand that though it doesn't go with your personal path, you can still work around it, and it's still okay to experience new things. So as far as the solitary practice goes, some of the positives of solitary practice is that you do have that full freedom and flexibility. You can set the pace, the rituals, the focus, and do your practice whenever you want to, however you want to. You can do it skyclad, you can do it in your PJs, or you can do it in full-out ritual garb. You also have a deep personal connection to the spirit without an outside noise. So you just get to have you and the spirit together without anyone else there, which is a very more personal connection than when you're with a group of people. And then it's also easier to evolve and change your practice as you grow. As you see things that you disagree with or your views change on certain things, you can change it openly and easily. Some things you may be like, no, I don't agree with that. And then a year later, you're like, oh, now I see why that's important. And now I'm going to add that to my practice. You have that flexibility to do so. Now, some of the negatives that go... Some of the negatives that go with solitary practice are just that it can feel lonely at times, especially during big celebrations. When you do a Sabbath, it might not feel as energetic than when you are with a group. You might feel slightly lonely during that celebration, and some people might not. But just be mindful that it is okay if you feel lonely. It's not the worst thing in the world. But also know that you're not alone because you have the spirits, the God and the goddess there with you. It is harder to find mentorship or peer learning, though you can go online and you can use books. It is just harder to find that ability to jump ideas off of other people when you're on your own and let it's less externally accountable. you do rely fully on your self-motivation. And so you will have more times when you wane and wax in your practice, because there's going to be times in your life where you're just less motivated to do your practice and you have no one else to help motivate you. And that can be very difficult at times when things get rough in the mundane world and it's just harder to follow your practice. But it's also important to just know that it's okay to wane, it's okay to wax, and it will come back around and your practice will come back to you when the time is right. So ultimately, neither is better or worse. It's all about just what nourishes your spirit at this point in time in your journey, what you feel will bring you the best that you need in your journey. So just keep that in mind. So as far as community of solidarity goes, the truth is many witches walk in and out of both of these at different times in their life. You may start solitary and then join a group for a while and then return to a solo practice. Or you might just weave between both together, practicing mostly alone, but then gathering for special rituals or festivals. It's just important to know that your path is uniquely yours. Trust where you're being led. Honor what feels safe and empowering. And remember, whether in a circle or a candlelit room by yourself, your magic is valid and powerful. And so before we close this episode out, I just want to take a really short moment to just ground. So take a deep breath, close your eyes if you're able to. Ground your feet. I want you to feel the solid ground underneath you. Imagine your roots reaching down into the earth, all the way into the center, and providing you structure and grounding. As you breathe in, imagine a beautiful golden light coming up through your roots and through your body and out your crown. And now as you breathe out and in, imagine above, a beautiful silvery light is coming down and entering your crown. Going down through your body and out your roots into the earth. This gold light is a terrestrial energy, grounding you and aligning your body. And the silver light is your celestial energy, coming in and filling your body with light and energy. Allow both of these lights and energies to mingle together, correcting any imperfection in your body and healing anything that might need healed. Feel your cells realigning in yourself. And take one more deep breath in and let it out. And allow the energies to exit your body, allowing you to feel more grounded, more at peace, and ready to go on with your day. When you are ready, you can open up your eyes. I'm just going to say thank you for joining me on Cradles and Candles. I hope today's episode inspired you to find a little magic in your everyday. And remember, whether you are curious, learning, or fully immersed, you are not alone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it with someone who might need a little magic today. You can also follow me on Instagram at Cradles of Candles or on TikTok at Cradles and Candles for more guidance, inspiration, and community. So until next time, keep your candle lit, your heart open, and the magic alive.